In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. It is good to be here. Had a couple weeks, or just a week off. Really, but it's been a couple weeks since we've put out an episode. So we're back. It feels good to be back, Mitch. We're recording this on June 29th, just a couple days left in June. It's going to be July. Crazy. I feel like this month has just absolutely flown by. Do you have any plans for the 4th of July weekend?
Not as of the moment.
Okay.
For my friends that are listening, respond to my texts. Damn it. Like, come on. Let me know what's going on.
I'm ghosting your buddy Mitch Mo. Well, I'd hang out with you if you weren't a like 12-hour drive away.
I might just drive the 12 hours to come.
I mean, hey, you're more the door's open.
Have a
3-day
weekend. Why not? You know,
hey, it's a great point. It's a great point.
But hey, we took the week off because you were spending some great time with your family. You got to see some beautiful sights, national parks. How was your trip? Did you see some cool stuff out in nature?
We did. Yes. It was great. We were down at Bryce Canyon National Park, Utah. It's just, you know, I have not taken advantage enough living here and getting out into the beautiful national parks and state parks and national monuments and all the cool stuff around here in the state and especially in southern Utah. So we got a day. We got away for a couple days with my in-laws. Who are great, and we had a great time doing some hiking and, enjoying the outdoors. And it was great. But now, you know, and now there's a time to talk about sports. And we've actually got quite a bit to talk about that's happened since we last recorded. As well, Mitch, we've got some fun segments on the second half of the podcast, the top five as always, and then a fun little exercise we're going to do at the end. But I wanted to address this before we jumped any further, though. The intro was fantastic. Very long winded. Did you do that for our good friend of the podcast, Linda? Did you do that for Linda? Because I felt
gosh.
That one is a special one for our dear friend, Linda.
Yeah, we have a Linda update. I totally didn't even think about that. If you listened to the last podcast, you know I was taking packages in for Linda. Linda was on vacation in Mexico.
Mitch is the best neighbor ever. That's what we learned.
She was supposed to be back on the 15th, and about the 20th, I realized Linda's still not back. And I thought maybe she got wrapped up in the cartel. Maybe she was just living in Mexico now. Come to find out... On the 23rd, I found out that I was about to file a missing person report. I mean, I was worried about Linda. She had unfortunately fallen ill while on her return back from Mexico. I met up with her son to make sure all the parcels were exchanged correctly and made sure she was doing okay. She is on the mend, but it's going to be a little bit. So, get well soon, Linda. I'm glad to hear that you aren't a cartel member now or anything like that. That's always good news. Yes, Linda is going to be okay. She's just getting over an illness, and she'll be home soon. So
you didn't steal any of her mail, right? It was all returned properly.
What kind of person do you think I am that I would steal a sweet woman's mail? Are you kidding me?
What did she even get? Like the Home Digest? Like what?
Oh,
like,
no,
what
she was expect. Well, her mailbox is probably full. I don't have a key to her mailbox, but she was expecting shoes. So I did make sure her shoes were not
that they, that they fit okay. Did they fit okay?
I did not put on Linda's shoes. No, I did. I believe my feet are much larger than Linda's. So
now I'm just imagining Mitch in a pair of old lady shoes, and this is just a beautiful
image.
They're
probably really comfortable. I'm not gonna lie, they're probably really comfortable. You know.
Oh yes. Well, it is good to hear that Linda is doing better and that she is okay. Because when you told me this story a couple of days ago, I was like, you didn't tell me the end. You let me experience the whole thing almost in the way that you had experienced it. It was quite a journey. So I thought there for a second our dear friend Linda was gone, and there was going to be a ransom note coming in the mail in a couple of days. So,
oh, yeah. There was serious concern.
Good to hear. Well, that's the Linda update for you. You'll love to see it.
Linda Mitch, updated let's, the week.
Yes, let's not waste any more time here and jump into this with the news.
Yeah, let's get into it. Let's get around the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news. I yelled that one as if Linda were right next door.
Nice.
The way
for her.
Is. For Linda.
Pour one out for Linda.
But I mean, she's fine. She'll be okay.
But that's a good point. All right, let's start with some NFL news, and we've seen this has been a trend this offseason, right? It has very much been the offseason of wide receivers getting paid and getting paid big time money, and we've seen big receivers, some of the best in the league, move teams or get traded because of one team's unwillingness to pay that market value and other teams' willingness to do so, and we've heard the rumors and rumblings of many a young star wide receiver in this league potentially being available, right? The Deebo Samuel, it was AJ Brown until it actually happened, right? One of those guys this offseason that's been mentioned is Terry McLaurin, as the Washington Commanders have been negotiating a long-term extension for him. Well, he has reportedly gotten that extension. It'll be a three-year deal worth up to $71 million in new money. It's got $28 million signing bonus, the largest given to any wide receiver, and 76.4% of the new money in his deal will be guaranteed. So again, it clearly this is going to be a lot of performance based incentives, so who knows what the ultimate number will be, but I mean, he gets that big number up front in the signing bonus, $28 million, and again, about three quarters of his contract is guaranteed. So that is I love this deal in so many ways, Mitch. I love the deal with the guarantees and all that money up front. If that's how you're going to do your contract, that's how you want it. But I also love that it's a shorter term deal. So he can cash in now, but let's say it hits and he is a star by the end of this. He's still in his late 20s. He could go get paid and get paid even bigger 3 years from now, and he sort of re-ups there. So I think this is good all the way around. Washington has to keep a player of this caliber. They have no choice. If Carson Wentz is going to somewhat work in Washington, like, they need Terry McLaurin to be a star. So good that they figured this out, and I'm glad that he gets the money that he got.
Yeah, I think he's a star already and completely deserving of this money, and good for him that he's going to get a lot of this up front, because, you know, you may be wanting to ask out here after maybe a year or two of Carson Wentz, and you want to make sure that you maximize the amount of money that you're going to get in this contract. So I love it for Terry McLaurin. He was one of those guys that I really thought was going to move before the beginning of the season. I thought he was going to find a new home, but and that flips right back over to, you know, Washington and you know, how much they actually need Terry McLaurin, and how much they need to keep a star there for Carson Wentz to throw to, because he's a star already in my book. So I think great for both parties. Terry McLaurin's going to get paid. And even if he plays out the extent of this contract, he'll be 29 by the end of his contract. Still enough time for a wide receiver, if he stays relatively healthy, to sign another big deal, and continue to make his money. So a good deal for both sides, I think.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mitch. As you mentioned, I would agree with you that he is a star. Just looking at his numbers on his first three seasons in the NFL, he's had at least 900 receiving yards every season, had 919 as a rookie and over 1,000 yards the past two seasons for Washington, at least 75 receptions the last two seasons as well. So he has been very consistent. And I mean, I'd love to go look at the quarterback starts in Washington over those three seasons and see who the hell was throwing the ball to him. That's pretty impressive there. So
I think he had Colt McCoy at one point. So
I'm just trying to think through the COVID seasons. There had to have been some weird ass names throwing the ball for the Washington football team. So there you go. Terry McLaurin getting money. Getting another extension, and again, just follows the trend of a lot of wide receivers signing big deals. That 2019 class of wide receivers, right? That was a big time class. A lot of those guys getting money now, and we're continuing to see that this offseason. Mitch, the only other bit of NFL news that we wanted to talk about here is not much news that we have to update right now. It's just in regards to the Deshaun Watson hearings. He is currently undergoing his NFL hearings. We've sort of covered the way that the civil case has played out and the situation there, which was a lot TBD. This is going to be what directly impacts Deshaun Watson playing next season for the Cleveland Browns, and that's where it becomes maybe more pertinent for our conversation and what we talk about here on the podcast. But it's basically TBD at this point still. Day two of these hearings has concluded, and they will resume day three tomorrow, Thursday, June 30th. So, you know, perhaps as you're listening to this now, or if you've taken a couple days to listen since we've recorded, the outcome may be determined as far as what his suspension will look like. But this is to set, basically figure out what the sort of punishment is or isn't going to be for Deshaun Watson. The rumors and reports that came out last week ahead of this hearing was that the NFL is expected to push for a suspension of at least a year, an indefinite suspension of at least a year. You know, you look at the Trevor Bauer situation with the MLB, which has that has now become a 2-year suspension for Trevor Bauer, right? And you wonder if the NFL feels any pressure to at least appear like they're punishing in a similar manner to the MLB, whether that is a factor to them or not. It remains to be seen. But ultimately, whenever this ends, we'll know what the punishment is. It's just a matter of how long this hearing takes. And again, we'll talk about that when it comes, but just something to note, if you're not aware that that's going on right now, we should have some news soon in regards to Deshaun Watson, if and how much he would be playing for the Cleveland Browns the next year, and then maybe a better idea of where they go moving forward, and maybe the Baker Mayfield situation gets cleared up as well.
Yeah, I mean, given the NFL's track record on not knowing how to really gauge how much to suspend someone, I can see this going one of two ways. They do the right thing and it's a year at least, or it's something weak like 8 games. Like, and I think that I wouldn't be shocked with either result. From a football standpoint, though, I want to make an addition to the pit of misery, Dallin, and it's the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns, not knowing the future of the guy that they just signed for, it was over $100 million. It was over $200 million.
Yeah, guaranteed.
Guaranteed. And not knowing his future with the team, not knowing what kind of direct impact he's going to make in guaranteeing all that money. And then in the process of that, burning the bridge with the guy that you've been riding upon for the last 4 years. And putting you in a position where you're going to have to play Jacoby Brissett, right? Jacoby Brissett in that situation. There is no way you are talking Baker Mayfield back into playing for the Cleveland Browns. There is no way. Even if you got on your hands and knees and beg and pleaded with them, there's no way Baker Mayfield is coming back to Cleveland after you have absolutely alienated him from the organization while he's still under contract, by the way. I mean, a complete organizational debacle that is of historic proportions. You do not scare away the potential help when you don't know the future of the guy you brought in. And for that, Cleveland, the Browns are going in to the pit of misery. Dilly dilly for the foreseeable future, because that was not just on a football standpoint, or just an organizational mess, what you've just created here. You have completely undermined your entire season, alienating Baker Mayfield, not knowing what the future of Deshaun Watson is going to be. Cleveland Browns, dilly dilly, welcome to the pit of misery.
Yeah, dilly dilly. I mean, Cleveland should be familiar with the pit of misery. They were in the pit of misery themselves just for a very long time as a franchise with some horrible seasons. But I think that that was the most fascinating thing to me about the timing of all the Deshaun Watson trade stuff that happened just a few months ago with Cleveland, with New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina, right? These teams that were considering trading for him, not knowing what the suspension was going to look like, how much time was he going to miss? Like, and if they did, isn't that even more egregious of a mistake, knowing this guy's going to miss an entire year and we're okay with that? Like, it's going to work out fine. And you talk about alienate, Mitch, and I agree with you there. I think more than alienating Baker and some of the players on this roster, they've alienated a fan base. Right. I mean, I grappled with this because my team was one of the ones trying to trade for this guy. And I thought to myself a lot in that anticipation of perhaps we trade for Deshaun Watson. How would I feel as a fan? Would I be OK with that? Would I feel comfortable supporting my team? Would I feel comfortable supporting Deshaun Watson, like in the midst of this unknown as to what he did, what he's guilty of? To just bring that person into this building and expect your fans to just support you wholeheartedly. And now it looks like you didn't think ahead at all, right? That you jumped the gun and you've done this haphazardly. I feel for Cleveland Browns fans. I really do. I know I've listened, I've seen on social media, I've heard on podcasts, people talk about Browns fans talk about reconsidering their fandom, abandoning their fandom, changing teams. Like, what do you do? And I sympathize with that because, again, these are the Deshaun Watson is the football player. There's no question. We can all agree on the type of football player it is. But we are talking about something beyond that, something way more important than that, too. And that is what he represents. And especially as a quarterback, the face of the franchise, to bring that kind of guy in with all of this going on is just wild. It is just wild and deserving of being in the pit of misery. So I'm right there with you, Mitch. Again, once this hearing ends, which could be tomorrow on June 30th, it could go another day on Friday. We'll see. But essentially when that happens, we'll get an understanding of what that suspension will be. It seems like the NFL is going to be pushing for a year. I don't see why the NFL wouldn't get their way in that regard, to be honest. So at this point, I would expect it to be about a year suspension. But as you wisely pointed out, the NFL's never been good at this stuff. So it could be four games. I mean, who the hell knows? Or they could suspend him for two whole years and just do something. You know what I mean? Like, we don't really know. So we'll see. But something to monitor. And again, I think with a lot of the unknown as far as what Cleveland does on the field moving forward this season, who's playing quarterback, what happens with Baker Mayfield, once this gets figured out, we'll see the dominoes begin to fall as far as those things.
Yeah.
Mitch, let's transition into some NBA news. And in the last 2 weeks since we've recorded a podcast, the NBA Finals has finished. You already know this because, well, you don't live under a rock, so you've been around. But the Golden State Warriors have won their fourth NBA title in the past 8 years, defeating the Celtics in six games. Mitch, we both anticipated this series to go seven games. And I had picked Boston in seven. You had picked Golden State in seven. And ultimately, Golden State got it done in six. The series was tied 2-2 after four. I don't think either of us saw a scenario where a team won like two games in a row, but that's what the Warriors did, getting it done at home and then on the road in game six. So, in fact, actually, I think they won three games in a row. So there you go. What was the most surprising thing about this NBA Finals series, and the Warriors getting it done in six games over Boston?
Well, the fact that it wins six games, quite honestly, because, I mean, this should have been a seven-game series in my mind, no doubt. I think going back to Boston, it just felt like the Celtics games to lose. And talking about the Celtics defense, how good they've been, not just in the postseason, but all season long defensively, it felt like a mega home court advantage for Boston to go back in game six, get the dub, play great defense. And in fact, the exact thing, you know, the exact opposite thing happened. So, you know, Golden State's defense showed up once again. And I think we had mentioned this in the past where in the past episode where Golden State's defense was matching Boston's defense throughout the series. And they were at least, doing enough to keep their offense, and their offense was producing enough to hold Boston at bay. Andrew Wiggins again in game six played 44 minutes, putting up only 18 points, but I mentioned how locked down that guy was all series long on Jason Tatum. And these guys Golden State's defense just continued to show out. And so game six was definitely surprising for me, because there was no doubt in my mind it was going to seven.
Yeah, it's fair. You know, I'm glad you brought up the Warriors defense, because one of the talking points we had in our preview of this series was ultimately that matchup between Boston's offense and the Warriors defense. And essentially whoever won that matchup over the course of the series was going to win the series. And that turned out to be true. And it was the Warriors defense that was superior to not only Boston's offense, but as you pointed out, Boston's defense, really. I mean, the Warriors defense was incredible, highlighted by Andrew Wiggins and his job on Jason Tatum. But Steph Curry deserves a ton of credit. Draymond Green doing what he does as an off-ball defender. They were just locked in. And I think ultimately that was the biggest takeaway for me, is you saw a team that was locked in, a team that knew how to complete its task, had been there before, been to the finals, had won finals, knew what to do in order to get it done, and executed when they needed to do it. And on the other side, you had a team in Boston who was new to it all, who had a rookie head coach, who had young stars that had never been on this stage, and you saw them fumble the bag, right? You saw them fall short. You also saw them at moments, and I think back to that game one and that fourth quarter in that game one, that game three, at home against, at home in Boston, they had moments of true special dominant basketball where they were clearly the better team on the court. But ultimately, I think it just came down to that lack of experience, first time being through it and not being able to step up when you needed to. And that will hopefully for the Boston Celtics come with time, right? If they get a chance to go back there, but easier said than done getting back to the NBA Finals. But, any other thoughts there on the NBA Finals before we move on?
I mean, thank you, Draymond, for at least showing up in game six.
It was rough at times. It was rough at times in the series and in the playoffs.
Those first three games were historically bad for Draymond. I think he had 17 points and 18 fouls in those three games. Like, really, really bad. Look, at least he came up, showed out. He played a full game, 42 minutes, 12 points, 12 boards, 8 assists. So, he was a contributor in that. I really, truly think still the better team won here. As good as Boston was, the better team won.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you there. And again, some recognition for Andrew Wiggins, who really, was he snubbed a Finals MVP, Mitch? I mean, you were kind of on that last.
Yeah, he was.
You're fucking ridiculous. Okay, shut the hell up, dude. What are you talking about?
What the fuck are you talking about? This dude stalwart.
All right, keep the bit going. I get it. I gave you I gave you the opportunity. You took it. I shouldn't have given you the opportunity. It's fine.
It's an offensive league. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because Steph Curry was incredible. It's fine. It's all good.
I never said that he wasn't. Steph Curry was incredible. Andrew Wiggins was more incredible on defense.
I don't know. NBA draft, Mitch. NBA draft. The NBA draft has also happened in the time since we last recorded, an eventful evening, as it sort of had come up to the draft, it seemed the consensus was going to be Jabari Smith Jr., the forward out of Auburn at the number one pick. But then hours before the draft, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, the, you know, the guy with all the NBA insight, unless Shams Charania beats him, had started putting out it's going to be Paolo Banchero. And sure enough, Paolo Banchero, the forward out of Duke, goes number one to the Magic. Chet Holmgren, number two to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's the big man out of Gonzaga. Jabari Smith Jr. goes to the Rockets at three. Keegan Murray, the forward out of Iowa, who I talked about on last podcast in a little preview there. Some of my favorite NBA draft prospects. He goes number four to the Kings, and the number five, Jaden Ivey, goes to the Detroit Pistons. Mitch, so that was the top five there. Let's kind of start there. What stuck out to you there? Was any of those fits that you love more than others, or anything that was sort of questionable there in the top five?
Look, it was a toss up between the top three, right? Like, I guess I guess if there were two front runners, it would be Paolo Banchero and Jabari Smith, right? That was for the two that could be going number one. Chet Holmgren going number two, definitely makes a lot of sense for the Thunder. They get a big guy with outstanding perimeter skills for a guy his size. I just want to sympathize a little bit with Kings fans here, and I know that like you feel like you passed up on a really great talent in Jaden Ivey, but I've said this multiple times on this podcast. Do not draft another guard. You saw what position it put you in when you had multiple young guards, you know, multiple guys that played the same position, and it really put you in a hole because you could not, like, you clearly had all this talent, but you had to flip it somewhere. So to get a young, talented guy like Keegan Murray, I don't hate that pick. Maybe as much as Kings fans hate that pick, I don't hate that pick at all. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I had mentioned Keegan Murray as my best, the best bet to be like the sneakiest best player from this draft. And he ends up going number four. So right outside that top three. But I really do think Keegan Murray has got a lot of potential, and I think it's a great fit in Sacramento. But I do understand for Kings fans, because you could, I mean, we all saw the graphic that came out the day of the draft, right? The guys who the Kings picked, and then the future Hall of Famer that goes right after them. Right. I mean, you saw it in Luka. You saw it, you know, we've seen it in the past with this Kings team. And so I think for Kings fans, you just automatically assume Jaden Ivey is the next Allen Iverson. And maybe he is, but that shouldn't make you discouraged about Keegan Murray, because I do think they got a really good player here. I don't think that they played it safe. I don't think that they reached in any sort of way here. After that big three, there was really your pick of whatever you wanted. I mean, there are different types of players that could have gone for there. And I think Murray is a great fit in Sacramento.
Well, it just, even like, you know, if you pick Jaden Ivey, you're in the same exact position that you were with Heald, Fox, and Halliburton. You're in the same exact position where, you know, you can't keep all of them. One of them's going to have to go. One of them's going to have to go. And it just didn't make any sense for me to, like, I guess you could, if he winds up being an all-star in his rookie year, you gain some capital back that way. But like, it just didn't make any sense for me for them to pick a guard. So, I mean, Keegan Murray seems like the right pick here for me.
Yeah. I mean, time will tell. We'll see how it plays out for Sacramento, but certainly interesting little draft night drama as always. Kings fans, tough spot, but you know, we'll see what they can build moving forward. Not much else surprising, I guess, out of the NBA draft. There wasn't too much there. Benedict Mathurin going number six to the Pacers did surprise me. He was another guy I mentioned as one of my favorite prospects. I just didn't think he'd go that high. I thought he was maybe more of a late top 10, you know, 8-9, maybe around 10-12. He goes number six. I think he's him. That's going to be great there. In Indiana next to Tyrese Halliburton. That's a great guard combo there. Halliburton, great passer, great defender, lengthy. Benedict Mathurin, a killer instinct, offensive powerhouse. He can improve on defense and on as a playmaker, but that's what Halliburton brings. So I love that pairing there. Anything outside of that top five that stuck out to you, Mitch?
How about the Heat picking – like off-brand Nikola Jokic, Nikola Jovic.
How about the Denver Nuggets passing on him at 21? I mean, they could have had Jokic or Jovic, but they passed on that. That is just, I mean, that wasn't the marketing department's pissed. That's all I'm saying. They weren't in on that decision making. Cause if you asked the marketing department, they would have said they'd have been hammering the table for Jovic at 21. There's too many good opportunities there to pass up. But Nikola Jovic is an interesting prospect though. Not Jokic, but a big guy wing sort of player. That sort of mold that we've seen before. But the Heat, you know, they're good at drafting. So, you know, you can always trust what they're going to do. Anything else for the draft?
I just want to give a shout out to the best name in this draft.
Okay.
Musa Diabate.
Oh, yes.
Drafted by the Clippers in the second round. I think that probably gets, or Khalifa Diop was drafted 39 by the Clippers, or the Cavaliers, excuse me. Those are two good names. I just want to get
that is a good one.
Names.
That is good. I will say too, if you just take away what you envision Chet Holmgren to look like, because you know what he sounds like, Chet Holmgren itself kind of sounds like a 50s detective man in a TV show. So I kind of like that name, but in reality, he's this 7-foot lanky weird kid from Minnesota. So I don't know. It just kind of has a different connotation, but I kind of like that.
Holmgren sounds like he should be what Sunshine was in Remember the Titans. Like, that should be the quarterback's name. Like, he's kind of the weird kid that comes in.
Okay, I can feel it.
Yeah, the weird long-haired kid. I don't know. We're getting weird.
I like it.
This, but
I like it. No, you're good. All right. Well, that's it for the NBA draft. It's always fun. NBA Summer League will begin here in a couple weeks in Vegas. Get to see the rookies start to ball out here, get an idea of sort of team fits, who's going to emerge early. Should be fun to watch. NBA free agency is going to begin here actually tomorrow on Thursday, June 30th. So we'll get into more of NBA free agency as things play out. We get actual trades, actual deals moving forward. We've had a bunch of news as far as player options get turned down or accepted. And we'll see sort of how those play out again next week. We did, though, have a trade ahead of free agency. And, you know, we may see even more in the interim between us recording and when the actual free agency period starts. But DeJounte Murray, the all-star guard from the San Antonio Spurs, is headed to the ATL to pair up with Trae Young. The Hawks are acquiring Murray and sending back Danilo Gallinari and three first-round picks, the 2023 first-round pick that is via the Charlotte Hornets, plus Atlanta's 2025 and 2027 first-round picks. Mitch, first off, I want to focus on this, the Atlanta perspective. This is like the perfect guard to pair up with Trae Young, a defensive-minded, capable guard who can generate some offense on his own, who can play make at a high level, but can really focus on being a defender on this team and taking pressure off Trae Young when they're both on the court on offense, as far as allowing Trae to not only play more off ball, but also, you know, being able to set up offense and run plays through DeJounte Murray himself. So I love this. I love this for Atlanta and the price. I mean, it's three first-round picks, but they're far off first-round picks, and they only had to give up Danilo Gallinari. I don't actually hate it.
Yeah.
I don't actually hate it for Atlanta.
No, I don't either. And we talked about this at the beginning of the playoffs, how Atlanta was going to be a sneaky, scrappy team. They won out of the 9 seed, became the 8 seed. They were facing the Heat. They were going to be a sneaky, scrappy playoff team. And pairing him up with Trae Young, I think, is something that puts them to that edge of maybe what the Heat were, where you have two really quality guys. Like, they're missing the superstar, obviously. Trae Young might be a superstar. I don't know.
I think Trae Young is a superstar.
So then you pair up another really quality guy in DeJounte Murray with Trae Young, and maybe they are in that Heat-esque range now. Like, the Heat outperformed, I think, what we thought they were going to do, right? Becoming the one seed. We thought they were going to be a playoff team, maybe a top 5 seed. But I don't think we anticipated them. I know you and I didn't at the beginning of the year anticipate them being a one seed going into this last NBA season. And I think that puts them in that conversation that if things go right and they continue to play that kind of scrappy type of basketball that we saw them play this last year with another guy to complement Trae Young. And as you mentioned, Trae Young, more off-ball opportunities. We're talking about a team that could be a serious competitor, even with just the single addition of DeJounte Murray. And for the price, pretty decent, pretty good. I really like this move for Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, the Hawks were in the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago, right? And they made that run as, I believe, a five seed that year against the Bucks. And then last year was a disappointment to not be more securely in the playoffs, to have to sneak in on the bubble, right? And clearly they saw they needed to improve around Trae Young, and they've made one move. But I don't know if this is the only move, right? There have been rumors of Clint Capella being available, John Collins being available. We know that Atlanta had reported interest in Rudy Gobert, but does this all off the table now that they've made this move for DeJounte Murray and had to include three first-round picks? So we'll see what Atlanta does, but certainly I think if the roster is more or less the same and they've added DeJounte Murray for Danilo Gallinari, then this is a better team, definitely more of a top five, top six seed in the East, and potentially even better, right, if everything sort of works out. I mean, you look at DeJounte Murray and talk about a guy who, you know, really emerged this past season, 25 years old, career best 21.1 points per game, 9.2 assists, 8.3 rebounds, and two steals last season. All-star for the first time in his career. He set the Spurs single-season franchise record for triple-doubles in a season with 13 this past year. And again, I think just complements exactly what you would want alongside Trae Young. For the San Antonio Spurs, Mitch, it is curious to see them wanting to flip a 25-year-old guard coming off his first All-Star season when you don't really have much else to build around. And you think, well, DeJounte Murray wouldn't be a bad piece to sort of keep around no matter what you do in the future. But I will say, I think the prospect of acquiring three first-round picks is a little too much to pass up. And I think my guess is that once that became available, it became too much of a no-brainer, right? DeJounte Murray is under contract next year for $16.6 million, but he will be a free agent, I believe, in 2024, an unrestricted free agent. So there's no guarantee he stays in San Antonio for a couple more years. If you can flip him now for all that draft capital, probably too much to pass up. What the hell is Greg Popovich doing there, Mitch? Why is he staying? Like, this team is so badly in need of an absolute teardown rebuild, but they're just not doing it because Popovich won't leave. Like, why is he still there?
Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, look, you're completely correct in saying, like, you know, they definitely are in a rebuild stage, right? And the prospect, like, yeah, it would be great to build around DeJounte Murray, but you get the three first-round picks in return. There's so much potential behind those three first-round picks that you just can't pass it up. I'll go out on a limb. Greg Popovich is holding the San Antonio Spurs back.
Kind of what it feels like. They should have been rebuilding last year, right? But like they weren't.
It's time to I don't know, offer the guy a severance package and just say, hey, look, dude,
how about bring security to his office and say, homie, it's time to pack your shit and leave. We appreciate it.
Like,
thanks
but
for
you
the
gotta
NBA
do something
title.
Because he's not leaving. I mean, just say, like, hey, dude, look, we'll buy you out right off into the sunset and then bring in something. We were just talking about Atkinson from Golden State. Like, he's worthy of getting a head coaching opportunity. I know he just went back to Golden State. There are plenty of guys out there. Sam Cassell, I think we talked about being he's a G League coach. Maybe bring in someone like that could restart this whole deal over in San Antonio. They have to bring someone else in different, because Greg Popovich right now is holding back the San Antonio Spurs from a true rebuild, which is absolutely what they need.
Yeah, it's just so strange that he's still there, because he's clearly at the end of his career. We all know that. So why he's sticking around for these last couple years so that they can go under 500 and then he can retire just seems strange. Mitch, my opinion, my gut feeling is that the Spurs plan on hiring Quinn Snyder to be their head coach once Greg Popovich is gone. And technically, yeah, although he has stepped down from the Utah Jazz, they still own his contract because he has 2 years remaining. So if the San Antonio Spurs in the next couple of years want Quinn Snyder, they'd have to trade for him. And you just acquired 3 first round picks. Well, you send one or two of those back our way, and you know, you got a deal. You can have Quinn Snyder, right? So I think maybe that's something to monitor here, but it is just the timing doesn't make sense. Why Pop is here? This team needs to tear it all down and rebuild, and good for them getting good value out of a player who, again, is great. DeJounte Murray is excellent, would be an awesome player to build around if you had for sure other pieces you felt good about. And in San Antonio, they just don't have that yet, right? I mean, Lonnie Walker's going to be out of here. He was a late mid-lottery guy just outside the lottery. That didn't really work out for you. Keldon Johnson is still TBD. You traded away Derek White at the trade deadline to the Boston Celtics, right? Like, what else, are you building around in San Antonio? So, interesting spot to be in for San Antonio. Again, DeJounte Murray headed to Atlanta for 3 first-round picks and Danilo Gallinari. Mitch, we talked about the Jazz, we talked about head coaches. We'll sort of talk about this news here. Quinn Snyder had stepped down as the Jazz head coach, and as of today, officially, the Utah Jazz announced that they've hired Will Hardy, the assistant coach for the Boston Celtics, 34 years old, coached with Team USA, is a San Antonio Spur, is a Greg Popovich coaching tree guy. Just like Quinn Snyder was. So the Jazz have a type. It's clear they like former Greg Popovich assistant coaches. If you were that, you've got it in. Hardy is well recommended in the NBA sources, in the NBA circles, excuse me, and is one of these emerging young guys. It is interesting. I think the context for me that's most interesting when it comes to Will Hardy as the new Jazz head coach is ultimately what it means and what the relationship is going to be like with him and Donovan Mitchell, who I believe the Jazz will be building around moving forward. And Hardy has a 5-year deal, so a long-term deal for him as a first-time head coach with Utah. But is Donovan Mitchell on board with Will Hardy? Or did he want somebody else? Because if your superstar is not on board with this guy, we're going to have some problems real quick. You're a small market, and we have seen time and time and time again the big stars leaving the small market when things don't go their way. So that would be my one thought there. But my assumption is that he's in on this. He's on board. We're all good. So, again, we'll see. I believe Hardy coached Donovan Mitchell when he was on Team USA a couple of summers ago. So there is some familiarity there. But again, Will Hardy, first time NBA head coach, taking over for the Utah Jazz. 34 years old. He'll be the youngest active head coach in the NBA.
Good for Will Hardy.
Yeah, there you go. Mitch, the other bit of news, and this one was just a funky situation. So you had mentioned it. Kenny Atkinson, the former Nets head coach. Remember those fun Nets teams with D'Lo, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen. I mean, those were some fun ones. That was led by Kenny Atkinson. Well, he got the boot when they brought in Kevin Durant, Kyrie. He has been on the Golden State Warriors coaching staff, helped them win another NBA title this past couple weeks, and had accepted the job, or at least come to terms to accept the job, as the Charlotte Hornets' new head coach. Great hire, Atkinson. I think did a really good job. Brooklyn, second chance for him, a young team that needs culture, and that's exactly what he brought to Brooklyn. But then he backs out of it after winning the NBA title, decides, no, I like it here. We win titles in Golden State. I want to go to Charlotte and do more work and have more responsibility and probably get fired by Michael Jordan in a couple years. I'm good. I'll stay over here. Maybe he knows the San Antonio job's going to be available next summer. And is like, well, I'll wait for that. Who knows? But the point is, he's not the Charlotte Hornets head coach the Charlotte Hornets then had to reset. The other finalist was Mike D'Antoni. We know him, very familiar. They re-interviewed him. Probably he turned it down because he was the second choice. And now they've brought back Steve Clifford. He was fired in 2018 from being the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. And he's back, baby. He has accepted the job after all this. He wasn't even among the first round of candidates to initially interview for the job. And here he is now as the coach. This is just such a shitty situation. It's a shitty situation for the Hornets, who have to now pivot, had this understanding with the guy to be their guy, and now have to pivot after everybody else has jobs and you've gone through this whole process. And a shitty situation for Steve Clifford, who you know was not the first or the second or probably at least 3 through 10th option for this job. But now it's yours because nobody else would take it and it didn't work out. This is bad for Charlotte, man. What, like, this is awful.
Yeah, completely fumbled by the Charlotte Hornets that you have to go to, like, your 12th guy on the list.
Well, fumbled by Atkinson. I mean, fuck, bro, what are you doing? This is like some McDaniels-type shit. Didn't Josh McDaniels do this to the Colts a couple years ago?
Well, yeah, and time will tell if that worked out with McDaniels over there in Las Vegas. Right. Time will only tell.
I mean, this might be the great, like, call for Atkinson, but that's kind of messed up to do this to this NBA franchise, all I'm saying.
Well, but what do we know about careers, Dallin? You got to look out for number one. You got to look out for yourself. And if Kenny Atkinson feels like, hey, I don't want to take control of this thing because I can see the writing on the wall, I don't want to take it. And I'll wait for the right opportunity to come up. And so, I mean, great for
Steve Clifford. Think about it before you accept a job. That's all I'm saying.
Great for Steve Clifford that he gets rehired with the Hornets. But you know what? I give more props to Kenny Atkinson because, you know what? Hey, the writing's on the wall. I'm going to a franchise that's struggling. And
why did you accept it in the first place then? If he knew this all along, Mitch, then why did he agree to the job? That's what I don't understand. He'd agreed to the job and then he backed out.
Steve Clifford might be dumb. Steve Clifford might be dumb. Wait, what are you talking about?
No, Kenny Atkinson, if you thought the writing was on the wall, if you thought this was a bad situation to put yourself in, then why did you accept the job and then, like, week later decide, JK, I'm out. We won a title and I like winning.
Hindsight's 20/20, Dallin. You probably looked back at it and went, hey, whoa, I don't know what the hell. But look, okay.
It's a small world in the NBA. It's all I'm saying. You want another head coaching job. Is anyone going to trust you? Is anyone going to saw what you did to Charlotte? I'm not, you know, we don't want you. I don't know.
Maybe there's other people in his ear. Maybe there is a Greg Popovich that's saying, you know, maybe he is wondering, like, hey, this San Antonio job is going to come up in a year and I'd like to be a part of that. Look, I don't blame Kenny Atkinson one bit for what he did. I think that what he did is just fine because, you know what? It's his own career. It's his own life, and he's looking out for himself. I have no problem with that.
Okay. Fair enough. All I'm saying is...
You clearly don't agree with that.
Listen. I think he should do what's best for him. I'm just saying, don't accept a job and then a week later decide it's not good for you because he kind of just fucked the whole Charlotte Hornets franchise because of it. That's all I'm saying. Like,
well,
that's not
Josh
cool.
McDaniels did it in Indianapolis and he didn't fuck
and that
the
wasn't
Colts
cool.
Over.
And that wasn't cool.
But he didn't fuck the Colts over, so.
I mean, I feel like having to end up with Steve Clifford feels like he kind of got fucked. I don't know.
Steve Clifford's a lot different than. Yeah. That's a whole lot different than the Josh McDaniels thing. But.
Yeah, Mitch.
I'm Team Kenny Atkinson.
Listen,
okay?
I'm saying do what you got to do. He loved winning an NBA championship. Was like, we win in Golden State. I'd like to stay here. Exactly. Mitch, let's gonna do it for the NBA news. We've got some other bits of news here before we ramp up and get to a mid roll. Let's start with some MLB. Recently, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, Pit of Misery attendee. Life sentence receiver had some statements in an interview mentioning the desire for the MLB to expand to 32 teams. He says, I want 32 teams in Major League Baseball, which is not surprising when you're talking about the revenue, just making more money. Of course, makes sense. 32 is a number that we see in the NFL. You know, it can work. We know the NBA is going to be headed in the next 5 years or so into an expansion that inevitably will bring 32 teams in the NBA as well. So MLB expansion, Mitch, I just wanted to ask, where would you put the two teams?
Well, this is clearly the smartest thing Rob Manfred has said his entire tenure.
Yeah.
Garbage, garbage, garbage is all I have to say about Rob Manfred. But if we're going to talk about the one smart thing he said over his tenure as MLB commissioner, there's a clear city in the East. Because if you're going to do this, you got to put one in the East, one in the West.
Right.
The clear city in the East is Montreal. You have to bring back the Expos.
100%. We're both on board here for number one. Bring back the Expos.
Have to bring back the Expos. It's easy.
We need at least another team in Canada. So whether we're putting one in Montreal, or let's say we want to flirt with Vancouver or whatever, you know, like we got to put one in Canada, but we already had a team in Montreal. Like, don't overthink it. Let's just do it.
It's Montreal or bust in my mind. I think so. No, okay, so then on the West Coast, there's two options here. There's two clear options, I think. Let's go with the obvious one, Las Vegas. It has to be Las Vegas. I think that if they get Oakland, the new stadium, which they should, the city and MLB has to cooperate and get Oakland the new stadium. They should put the expansion team in Las Vegas. I know that's probably wishful thinking, and the A's might be in Las Vegas in a couple of years, but you know what? Whatever. Outside of that, I really like Portland as a city.
Mitch, we're on the same page here, buddy.
I like Portland.
It's perfect. They already have an NBA franchise.
They have an NBA franchise. They have a background in professional baseball and past teams that have, you know, come together, been successful, then since folded. But I think that Portland or Las Vegas is the clear option on the West Coast.
Yeah, I think this is the scenario.
And I hate Portland, by the way. Every time I would come up to Washington in high school, I hated coming to Portland. But you know what? They deserve a baseball team. I think it's a great fit for Major League Baseball.
It'd be a great spot for the MLB. This is the scenario. This is what the MLB is going to look like in 5 years, Mitch. You're going to have the Montreal Expos back in the East. And obviously, this will be 16-team leagues. Four-team divisions, so four divisions, four teams each. So there'll be some maneuvering of divisions, and it will be interesting to see what they do there depending on what teams they bring in. But the A's are going to Vegas. Say goodbye to Oakland. It's not going to happen. They're going to be in Vegas. So you're going to have not only two new expansion teams in Montreal and Portland, you're also going to have a relocated team from the Oakland A's to the Las Vegas A's. And so we'll have three new markets for two new teams, and Oakland's it's going to be out of there. So,
yeah, I mean, it's certainly not looking good right now. I hope that they figure out their qualms and get a new stadium. I've seen the plans for the new stadium; it's beautiful. But you know, so clearly the Expos are the Expos are coming back to Montreal, right?
That makes too much sense.
If they go to Portland, I'm pulling for the team named the Beavers.
I love that. Portland Beavers sounds great. But is that too close to Oregon State, who's already the Beavers?
Well,
I think you'd have to maybe do something a little different.
So, like,
let me think. You've got Trailblazers as the basketball team. You have the Timbers as the football team, right? The Portland Timbers, I believe.
Yeah.
What is the triple? Didn't they have a triple A team?
They did.
Or am I mistaken?
It was the Beavers. It was.
They were. Okay. They were the Beavers. Okay.
That was like in the 60s, 70s area. I also love just Blazers, which was your high school mascot, and it was like a lumberjack.
Right. Well, I mean, that is what a trailblazer is, though. So
yeah. But I mean, maybe a big bearded guy with an axe instead of,
maybe it's,
you know,
like a throwback to the old sports days where all the teams had the same name in the city, the football team and the basketball team and the baseball team all had the same name.
Why not? Why not?
I mean, that's interesting.
You're starting from scratch out there. So
you'd have some fun. You'd have some fun stuff to work with there. I think that'd be great. But yeah, I mean, Portland, Vegas, Montreal, those are the three spots. But I just think with Vegas, Mitch, I just think I'm sorry, buddy, but it's going to be the A's. It's going to be the A's in Vegas. So no need for an expansion team because they'll have
a team. I can't make
a
day trip over to go watch a game now. I got to rent a hotel.
Now, here's my question, though. Would it – now, and you're an A's fan, so that's why I pose this to you. Would it make you feel any better if the MLB moved the A's to Vegas but added an expansion team in Sacramento, which is a growing city with a basketball franchise, an NWSL team? Is there interest there, perhaps? Is that make it feel better, or are you still just hurt that your A's are gone?
I mean, I bleed yellow and gold. Yeah, I bleed gold and green, but I would pull for that Sacramento team. I really would. I would pull for that Sacramento team because, you know, screw the Giants. They suck. I'm always gonna bleed a little bit of blue for Grandma Patty in the Dodgers. But you know, I'm a tried and true A's fan. I would pull for the Sacramento team though.
Yeah,
I would pull for
that. Could be
fun.
I would want to
see him successful.
And listen, I'm saying
you would have to move that AAA team out of Sacramento. You'd have to move the Rivercats out.
Fair enough. Get them out of here.
Move them to Portland.
Sure, why not? Move him to Oakland. Oakland, you get a AAA team now. This is what you get. Demoted.
They did have a AAA team before the A's moved over there. It was the Oakland Oaks. And
there you go. Oh, that's kind of a cool
name.
That was when they
were over in Kansas City. So
damn, that is a cool name. Yeah, that's on board now. Give Sacramento the MLB team, AAA team, the Oakland Oaks. I love that. Mitch, the last thing I want to add here is I just hope that Salt Lake City gets considered. Okay. We're not the biggest market out here in the West. Portland, Sacramento, whatever. Vegas, they got us beat. I get that. But Salt Lake is a great sports town. And I think there would definitely be interest in a baseball team. The Bees have always been successful here. People have loved the AAA. Baseball has been in Salt Lake for a very long time. So I think Salt Lake would be considered at one point, but probably unlikely. But could be fun.
I'd love to see a team in Salt Lake.
Yeah. Mitch, let's talk some college football news real quick. Arch Manning, the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning, has chosen his college that he will attend for probably a year before he enters the transfer portal for more NIL money. And the final three was between Alabama, Georgia, and Texas. And sneaky Steve Sarkisian and the Longhorns have secured the commitment from Arch Manning, top recruit in the class of 2023, top quarterback recruit in this class, and will come into a very competitive quarterback room in Texas, right, with Casey Thompson and Quinn Ewers, who just transferred from Ohio State, and now Arch Manning, who will come in 2023. This is a stacked room. Arch Manning could be the quarterback of the SEC era for Texas, which I'm sure was a huge pitch to him in this recruitment era, right? That you're going to come in. We hope to be in the SEC in 2024, and you are going to be the face of our program as we head into this new era in Texas football. Texas is back, yada, yada, yada. Here's $10 million and a fucking Bentley. Whatever it took, Mitch, they got it done. Arch Manning is going to Texas. You're a Bama fan. You missed out on Arch Manning. I mean, we all missed out on Arch Manning, but let's be honest, there's not a lot of teams that really had a shot. How does it feel to see him go to Texas?
He'll be at Alabama in a year.
I mean, that's all right. I mean, like
in this era, he'll be at Alabama in a year.
The transfer portal NIL era, like these kids aren't committed to shit. They don't have to be.
He'll play here at Texas, learn a ton. You got right because I think Casey Thompson.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of learning, dude. Learning on Friday nights. Learning beer dye. Learning beer.
He's gonna go have fun. Know? He's gonna go have fun in Texas. Once Bryce Young goes to the NFL, he'll be in Alabama. He will be.
I mean,
and to that, I just want to cap it off with horns down, right here. Horns down. Give us Arch Manning in a year. I just hope that Texas doesn't wreck him. Just don't wreck the kid because he's so fucking talented.
You know, that's the thing with the college football nowadays is it's just these kids are not permanent anywhere. There's no commitment needed. You can transfer one time, no penalty, immediately play somewhere. When schools can offer you NIL money to entice you one way or the other. I mean, there's just so many factors that, like, if he doesn't win the starting job day one, he might be in the transfer portal by October. I mean, who the hell knows, right? I mean, so that's just the era that we're in college football, so we'll be interested to see. But for now, as he plays out his final high school season, Arch Manning committed to the University of Texas. Mitch, the other college football news, which we thought was fun, was the ACC announcing that they will drop divisions for a format that will install permanent rivals starting in 2023. The NCAA ruled earlier this year that essentially conferences wouldn't need to be in divisions, wouldn't have to have the traditional division winner versus division winner championship game in order to qualify for the college football playoff. You can do whatever you want now. And this is the ACC adopting what I think is a very unique and interesting idea for their divisions. They're moving to what they call a 3-5-5 format, in which each team has three permanent rivalry games played annually, with the other 10 opponents rotating on an every other year basis. So essentially, in your conference play, you play the same three teams every year, and then you'd rotate between half of the division. In this case, the ACC has 14 teams, so five teams one year, five teams the other year. Guarantees that you play every team in your conference at least once over a two-year span. So if you're at that school for 2 years, you're facing everybody, and it maintains some of those tried and true rivalries on a yearly basis, which I think is a very good thing. So I love this sort of idea. It's something that we've talked a lot on my radio show with BYU entering the Big 12 and what their divisions in the future will look like. This sort of pod system, this unique way of scheduling where you have some permanent regular schedules and then a rotating cast of the rest of the conference, makes a lot of sense to me, and I do think is intriguing. I've seen some ACC fans have some gripes with some of the matchups that they've included, some of the rivalries, quote unquote rivalries they've shoehorned in here. And I don't think there'd be an agreement either way on that kind of stuff. You can't please everybody. But I do love the idea. And I think it's the right way to think about it when it comes to college football scheduling.
No, it definitely is. I mean, and I don't know what the gripe is. Like, we've paired up classic rivalries here. Florida State's going to play Miami. Okay, that's a classic rivalry. Virginia's going to play Virginia Tech. You know, UNC's going to play Duke. Like, South Carolina's going to play Clemson. Like, we've got these rivalry, these in-state matchups locked up just right. I love this for us because, you know what, we've literally had a 6-6 team play for an ACC championship recently, which was Georgia Tech. And that's not okay. And I think that this is going to help mitigate a lot of that. I love this system. I think the Pac-12, as it grows, the SEC, as it grows, I think that we should see more of this coming in the future if this works. And I think we're going to see over the next 2 years if it really does. But as the ACC, as the SEC and the Pac-12 start to allow more teams or start to welcome more teams in over the next 2 years, we're going to see if this system actually really works. And I think that, it's a damn good system, and it makes it really, really interesting. And it opens up the possibilities for new rivalries to be formed.
Yeah. And I think that's good. I think that's the balance there is preserving some of those traditional rivalries, but also opening up new possibilities. I do agree. I think for the most part, they kept everything intact. I know one of the most notable omissions in this was NC State and Wake Forest, who have played every year since 1910. It's the league's longest running uninterrupted rivalry, which will now be uninterrupted due to this change. But again, you're not going to please everybody. You're not going to do everything right. ACC is now going to be the fifth FBS league to scrap divisions. The Big 12 has operated without divisions since 2011. And again, in the new Big 12, when they add the four teams next season, and then when they eventually drop Texas and Oklahoma, we'll see what they end up doing. The American Conference did away with the division format last year. The Pac-12 and Mountain West have also voted this offseason to eliminate divisions in 2023 as well. So, I mean, we're already seeing a change. Again, different formats. I think most leagues are just going to go without divisions, take the two highest best records at the end of the season, and that'll be the championship game. But I do like this as a scheduling tool as far as those rivalries go. And making sure everybody in the conference plays every 2 years in that cycle, I think, is important as well. So we'll continue to see this change in college football and continue to talk about it here because I do find it interesting. Mitch, the final bit of news is the end of the NHL season as the Stanley Cup final has concluded. The Avalanche, Colorado Avalanche, defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-2 in the Stanley Cup. Lightning unable to go for the three-peat. We know how hard that is in sports. The three-peat, hard to come by. They can't get it done. And the Colorado Avalanche get it done in the Stanley Cup. Avalanche were really good this year. They were one of the best teams in the West pretty much all year. And so it's kind of unsurprising to me that they got here. But they didn't really even struggle, it felt like, throughout the postseason, which I thought was really surprising. I did think the Lightning were going to pull off the three-peat. Thought they were going to get it done. I am pretty surprised that they fell in six.
Yeah, the three-peat's one of the hardest things to do in sports, and particularly in the sport of hockey, when you factor in that not only are they playing 82 games, the same amount of games that the NBA plays, but they're playing football on ice. And like, when you factor that in, I mean, the Stanley Cup is one of the hardest trophies in all of sports to win, if not the hardest. So the Avs were just absolutely dominant throughout the regular season, did not struggle with the Lightning. Congratulations to Colorado. Well-deserved. And it really seems like that the Stanley Cup is going to be and you and I are learning hockey right now. Like we're new to hockey. We're learning it. It seems like it really is just like, how tough can you build your team? Like, who can withstand the long stretches here?
It's endurance. Yeah, it's endurance, right? And I think you see that. In a way, in the way the NBA sort of plays out because of the long series and how many games you have to play. Similar to the NHL, right? They're playing 7-game series. So it is a lot of games. You got to win a lot of games in order to win the trophy. And so it is a lot about toughness, endurance, health, but also just physically dominating, and especially even more so in hockey. So fun to see, you know, hopefully it won't be too long before we see our boys, the Kraken, at least get a shot, at least show up to the Stanley Cup.
Let's get in the playoffs to start. Let's start with
let's get a winning record. How about that?
Yeah.
We'll be looking forward to the NHL draft and our future Canadian superstar who will be joining the Seattle Kraken, because that's, I think, how hockey works nowadays. So they're probably either Canadian or Russian. I think that's still true. Mitch, that is it for the news. That's it for the first half of the podcast. We're going to take a break here and hit a mid-roll. And then when we come back, we're going to have a top five from our buddy Mitch Moe. Great as always. Look forward to that. And then a little fun segment to wrap up the show. So stick around. And we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitch Moe.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back in to the Sports Hour with Mitch Moe and Dallin. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. Second half of the show, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We got a top five coming up, and then a very special segment that me and Dallin are going to do here at the end. But let's start with the top five. You know, we've been doing a positional series throughout the summer leading up to NFL preseason, and we're going to keep that rolling. And, Dallin, I got to say that this top five that I did this week, man, I'll tell you what, there are so many names I wanted to throw within the top five that I could not throw, probably more so than the running backs. I think this one might have been one of the tougher ones that I've ever done. And on this week's edition of Mitch Moe's Top 5 List of the Week, we're going to be doing the top five wide receivers of all time.
Ooh, okay.
And look, I just want to get this out of the way right now. We all know who number one is.
Okay.
We'll get to him. We'll talk about him briefly. There's no dispute over who number one is, but
we'll get to him when we get to him.
We need to spend a little time deciphering maybe who five through two is. I want to give some honorable mentions, though. Terrell Owens, Steve Largent, Art Monk, Lance Allworth, James Lofton, Michael Irvin, and Marvin Harrison in the honorable mentions. In fact, Marvin Harrison was one I really, really wanted to put in my top five because I'm a big Marvin Harrison guy. but I want to give a special honorable mention to Don Hutson, who did not make this list. Don Hutson was a player for the Green Bay Packers from 1935 to 1945. He is the only receiver to be enshrined within the Hall of Fame, only wide receiver to be enshrined in the first Hall of Fame class. He had 99 touchdown receptions, and that was in the 1930s and 40s when they did not throw the football. Don Hutson was a true revolutionary at the position, so I did want to give him a special shout out. I could not put him in the top five for clear and obvious reasons, but I did want to give him an honorable mention for being a pioneer of the position.
You love to see it. I think that's when they had metal footballs, too, so that's even more impressive.
Yeah, the footballs were made of lead. The helmets were made of platinum. Yeah, all that stuff. number five on the list, though, let's start with Randy Moss. I have Randy Moss at number five.
Five. Wow. Okay. I'm already interested in this list.
982 receptions, a little over 15,000 receiving yards, 156 touchdowns, Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2018, and part of the NFL All 100 team. This guy holds the single season record for receiving touchdowns at 23. Look, this is a guy that when he was on, he was the best in the league. There's no doubt about that. When he was good, there was no one better than Randy Moss. His namesake is held in the saying, "You got mossed," because of his constant highlight reel, jumping over a defensive back and snagging a football out of the air. Outstanding years in Minnesota and New England. His time in Oakland, Tennessee, San Francisco, and his second tenure in Minnesota was pretty unimpressive, but when this guy was good, he was the best in the league. There's no doubting that Randy Moss is one of the most physically talented wide receivers of all time, so I have to put him at number five.
I'm gonna be honest, Mitch, I'm a little surprised. Five seems a little low to me. I am kind of interested in how your list plays out now.
I
just would have expected him to be higher, I guess, but I mean, I don't know what the list looks like, so I'll wait to judge, you know?
Okay, and we can come back to that in just a little bit when I tell you that number four on the list is Chris Carter. And I have Chris Carter at number four, a couple of years in Philadelphia, most of his career spent in Minnesota from 1990 to 2001, 1,101 receptions, for just a shade under 14,000 yards, 130 touchdowns, Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2013, an absolute snub that he was not on the All 100 team. Look, this guy had I almost spoiled it, even though you know who's coming, had the number one guy on this list not been playing in the 90s, Chris Carter would have been the most dominant receiver of the 1990s. He was part of one of the greatest teams to never win a Super Bowl. That was the 98 Vikings when they went 15-1. Chris Carter was a human highlight reel, probably the best hands of all time in football. I mean, this guy was grabbing. I mean, it looked like he was using the force to catch a football sometime. No one's going to touch that. Chris Carter would reel it in. Chris Carter, I have at number 4 on my list.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that one.
Are you?
I love Chris Carter. Don't get me wrong. I'm a little surprised, though. Little surprised he's ahead of Randy Moss, but that's okay. You love the Vikings. Who else are we throwing on there? Justin Jefferson? Is he on there already? What other Vikings can we throw on here? Adam Thielen?
Don't you get limp with me.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
Number 3 on the list, I have Larry Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald at number 3.
All reliable.
Spent the entirety of his career with the Arizona Cardinals. A little over 1,400 receptions. 17,492 receiving yards, 121 touchdowns, part of the all 100 team. Future Hall of Famer. He's the youngest player to catch 1,000 passes in his career. Second all time in yards and receptions. Fitzgerald, Tom Brady, and Adam Vinatieri, the only active players named up to this, as of 2019, to the all 100 team. Truly generational talent, a guy that played on a lot of bad teams, but never failed to stand out as far as what talent he could offer to the league. Because there's a lot of guys that are super talented and get shadowed by the fact that the team suck. Larry Fitzgerald was never one of those guys. Always outshined the situation that he was in. Larry Fitzgerald, number 3 on the list.
Yeah, also incredible just to see, played his entire career with the Cardinals. That is just, you just don't see that in sports nowadays. The ability, free agency is just different now for players, their ability to move around. And so you just don't see it very often. 2-3 teams is pretty common. So for him to spend his entire career with the Cardinals, put it the numbers that he did, 11 Pro Bowls, that's pretty awesome. Larry Fitz, man. We probably don't view him as highly as we should. I think history and time will do well for Larry Fitzgerald in our eyes, but he was so good for so long and we just got so used to him that I think even though it's been a couple years since he's been gone, it just sort of doesn't, I don't think we appreciate him quite as much as we will, 15, 20 years down the road.
And I'm on the opposite side of you. I don't think history will be kind to Larry Fitzgerald. Really?
I just think his numbers, you're just going to see him. He's second on the receiving list and no one's going to catch him. Unless Julio has another great 5 or 6 years. Right. He's going to be second by a sizable margin for a while. And I think when you see that name up there behind the guy at number 1, it's going to be real easy to be like, wow, Larry was really legit. If he was putting up those kind of numbers ahead of some of these other guys.
And that could be the case.
I'm wishful thinking.
I really hope that history is kind to Larry. I really do, because it's truly one of the all time greats. Number 2 on the list. A guy that had a shorter career, but during his time was the most physically gifted receiver I think we've ever seen play the game, and that's Calvin Johnson.
I love you for this. And I love you for this.
Look, the guy set a receiving record with 8 broken fingers in one season. 8 broken fingers, set a receiving record.
You only have 10 of them, folks. Just do the math. Yeah. That's a large percentage of his fingers. All of his phalanges. 80%.
11,000 and a half receiving yards, 83 touchdowns on 731 receptions. Hall of Famer in 2021. Had this guy had the longevity of Larry Fitzgerald, I don't think the guy we have at number 1 is number 1. I don't think so, because this guy was just he was so physically dominant and a matchup nightmare for a bad team. His teams were not good, but this guy was a guy you constantly had to worry about. Calvin Johnson is an absolute physical freak, the product out of Georgia Tech. I gotta put leaving Calvin Johnson out of the top 5 was going to be extremely difficult for me. Leaving him out of the top 3 was going to be equally as tough. Have to put him number 2.
I love you for this. I absolutely believe Calvin Johnson is a top 3 wide receiver of all time. I definitely believe that he should be up here. You just look at those 9 seasons, Mitch. 9 seasons, 6 Pro Bowls. He's a Hall of Famer off of 9 seasons. If that doesn't tell you how great of a player that was, right? I mean, that's enough right there. I mean, and then you look at his individual seasons, and this one just sticks out on how absurd these numbers are. 2012, 122 receptions, 1,964 receiving yards. I mean, that is just absurd. Only 5 touchdowns. God bless Matt Stafford, man. Only 5 receiving touchdowns and 1,900 receiving yards, but couldn't freaking cross the line more than 5 times. Incredible. 204 targets that season for Megatron. I mean, and a great nickname to boot. Yeah, Calvin Johnson has to be in here. I don't care about the longevity thing. You are absolutely right. Over a 9-year span, there's arguably not been a more dominant wide receiver. And you could argue, even in terms of greatest players, most dominant players at their position for a short amount of time. I mean, Aaron Donald. Calvin Johnson's in this conversation of dominance over his peers, you know, at his prime. So, yeah, I love it.
He's going to have the Barry Sanders effect where, like, he didn't play that long, but everyone's going to recognize his dominance. And that will not die. And we see it with Barry Sanders, another former Detroit Lion. We're going to see it with Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson, number 2 on the list. But number 1, let's not beat around the bush. It's Jerry Rice. I mean, Jerry Rice is the GOAT. Some argue the GOAT of football. I think he's number 2. I put him number 2 on my GOAT of football list behind Lawrence Taylor. But Jerry Rice, you know, 1,549 receptions, 22,895 yards, and 197 touchdowns. Hall of Famer in 2010, clearly part of the All 100 team. There's just no one, I think, right now that could break any of his records. And if they have to, just to put into perspective, they'll have to be as awesome as Jerry Rice for 15 consecutive seasons. They'll have to average Jerry Rice numbers for 15 consecutive seasons to beat Jerry Rice. And I just don't see in today's game with guys, you know, calling it quits early, or, you know, taking better care of their bodies and sitting out when they need to, maybe not playing beat, you know, dinged up like they used to back in the old days. I don't think that anyone is ever going to eclipse that. And Jerry Rice will remain the greatest offensive player of all time and the greatest wide receiver of all time.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry Rice is clearly the number one. And when we talk about untouchable records, we bring those up quite a bit on this podcast. And I mean, that's one of them. Jerry Rice's receiving records are up there. And yeah, I mean, the only caveat with that is that with the prolification of passing offense in the NFL, that's the only opportunity for guys to do it. But the difference is that it's benefiting quarterbacks more than it is wide receivers, right? Because again, wide receivers, injury, the amount of talent that there is in the league, like everybody can put up numbers. It's really benefiting quarterbacks putting up massive record-breaking numbers year after year. So, I mean, Jerry Rice's records are probably pretty safe.
I think that there's one guy that had he not fallen off the rails and been as awesome as he was throughout his career, Antonio Brown could have done that had he stayed sane. Like, I think he had that sort of talent skill set.
And he froze his feet.
And attracted that one. He attracted that much volume. Like, he attracted that much volume. Like, he could have done that had things gone a little bit different for me. Obviously, it's a tragic case in his case. But, you know, no one's touching Jerry. No one's touching Jerry.
Antonio Brown's surprisingly high up on some of these all-time lists. You'd probably be surprised, listeners, if you didn't know just the numbers he's already put up. And I mean, it's been a pretty long career, but he also doesn't feel like that old. Like, you know, he's not Larry Fitzgerald.
He's like 34, so, but yeah, Jerry Rice was prolific up until like 36, 37.
Right. Okay, Mitch. So that's the top 5. Run through it one more time. 5-1.
5-1. We're going to start with number 5, Randy Moss. Number 4, Chris Carter. Number 3, Larry Fitzgerald. Number 2, Calvin Johnson. And number 1, Jerry Rice.
Okay. Yeah. Great list, my friend. I love it. Top 5 wide receivers. You couldn't go wrong at number 1. I'm going to give you who I would say my top 5 is.
Okay. Yeah.
Cause I love your list. I don't want to take anything away from it, but I would disagree in one name, and that is, I think there's a little discredit to T.O. here. I think Terrell Owens absolutely needed to be on here. I think you're hyping up Chris Carter maybe a little much. So my order would be Jerry Rice, Randy Moss number two. Think some Randy Moss needs to be top three, and for me, he'd be number two. Calvin Johnson three, Larry Fitz four, and then I think I'd throw T.O. At five. I mean, Terrell Owens is one of three wide receivers with over 150 receiving touchdowns. Only Jerry Rice and Randy Moss have more than that. T.O.'s top 10 or top five in a lot of those other categories. So a top three in receiving yards. So T.O. is a tough one. He played for a lot of teams, was a very controversial figure, but you look at the numbers, there's no denying what he was able to do.
I'm not going to lie. I would have put another name ahead T.O.
Really?
I want to put Marvin Harrison above T.O.
And I think Marvin Harrison is kind of right there. I know you put him as like six on your list. I think he would have been right about there in my mind. But you don't, I mean, T.O. had more yards. He had more yards than Harrison. He had more receiving touchdowns than Marvin Harrison.
He also accounts for a fourth of Peyton Manning's career touchdown passes.
Sure.
So
T.O. did it with five different teams. He was catching passes from Jeff Garcia. I don't know.
Well, he wasn't catching passes from many people after Donovan McNabb. Let's just keep that real. Yeah, like maybe
he had 3 years in Dallas.
1 year of Tony Romo, but like you
know. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, great top five, my friend. I love it. Greatest top five wide receivers of all time. That is great. To finish off the podcast, we've got a fun little exercise. It's something that you came up with, Mitch, so I'd love you to kind of explain it to the listeners before we jump in.
Yeah, so the NBA season is over, but that doesn't mean we have to stop thinking about basketball. So what we're going to do here is the big three. Ice Cube's Basketball League, still going on. We're going to draft our all-time big three team. Now, let me put this into a little bit more perspective, is we're picking any basketball player from any era, and we are building an all-time three-on-three team. The way we're going to do this is draft style. So, Dallin, we'll have to figure out who's going first, who's going second in this. And then what we'll do is we'll take these teams, we'll post them up on Instagram. Make sure to go on our Instagram at the Sports Hour, guys. Vote for what team you think would win in a 3-on-3 matchup. And that's our plan. So, Dallin, any pre-draft strategies, thoughts that you've been mulling through your head so far?
Oh, well, I have an exhaustive list of names and options because it's a draft. So, I can't plan too much because you might pick some of the same players, but I feel confident my team's going to be significantly better than you. I guess my question is, how do we here's this. How about I say this? You correctly predicted the winner of the NBA Finals. You picked the Warriors. I picked the Celtics. So maybe it seems fair that you get the first pick in this exercise because of that. How does that sound?
Hey, I'm honored. I'm honored that you. Yeah,
you're
a man of integrity,
Dallin.
You're a man of integrity.
I don't need the first pick to kick your ass in this exercise, so let's go.
Okay. Are we doing this snakes? Are we doing this snake style?
Yeah. No. Well, yes. Let's go snake draft. That seems fair. Draft. So we'll snake draft this three rounds. And again, the big three. We're putting together three combination of a 3v3. And Mitch is on the clock for pick number one. You've got every basketball player ever at your disposal. Options aplenty. I'm going to put 30 seconds on our little timer here so we keep track. We'll go.
Okay. Now, look, there are two players I really want in this because, look, the three-on-three style is much different than the five-on-five style. So we're trying to build a team around that.
15 seconds left.
I'm between two names. Let me know when I get to 5 seconds.
5 seconds.
I'm going to steal someone I think you're going to take. I'm going to take Kobe Bryant, 101.
Okay. And Kobe Bean Bryant goes number one. What's the name? You know, all these big three teams have really interesting names. What's your big three team name?
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. I saw that. I don't know. Man, I don't know. We'll have to come back to me. We'll think of something.
Okay, Mitch has got a mole on a name, but Mitch Mo with the first pick takes Kobe Bryant. Talk me through Kobe. Not only did you think I was going to take him, which is an interesting strategy here to use, but what about Kobe in the 3-on-3 format you feeling?
You know, a very creative style, and I think when you get to 3-on-3, you have to get more and more creative. Kobe, while very fundamentally sound, was extremely creative in his game. The way that he attacked the rim, the way that he was able to step back and lure defenders off of that back step. I feel like Kobe in a one-on-one, if they were supposed to isolate Kobe, I feel like that he can not only take the ball to the rim in dominant fashion, but he can also distribute the ball very well. So I like Kobe as my ball dominant guy, as one of my ball dominant guys, not to get anything away, to get this thing done.
You know, I like that. I think Kobe, underrated defender, too. We forget about that.
But very good defender.
Earlier in his career, a very good defensive guard. Obviously, when he became the focal point offensively, took some of that responsibility away, but certainly capable in that, and he will help there. I like the pick, Mitch. I was not going to pick Kobe at all.
Oh, wow.
I felt like that was kind of too easy, so I was just going to like avoid Kobe at all. But I'm glad that you took him first, because that means I'm going to get the guy – that not the key to this team, but certainly one of the key cogs that I was hoping to nail here. And it is another former Laker. But I'm going Magic Johnson here.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick.
And in Magic, not only am I getting a creative playmaker right on the offensive end, but a guard with a ton of size. Right, that's going to be able to switch on defense and 3-on-3. Huge switchability. It's going to be key on this team. So we're going to go Magic as the playmaker, offensive point setter, also going to help out on defense.
I love that pick. That's a nice pick. So, like, clearly you're picking him for his ability to distribute the ball, switch back on defense, his ability to attack the rim. I mean, that beats my first pick, I think. Actually.
Okay. Well, you described three things right there, Mitch. And since I have the snake draft, I have this next pick. And I would say that you could describe this next player with those same adjectives. And I'm going Giannis Antetokounmpo as my second pick here, alongside Magic Johnson here. And so now you're seeing a couple guys, great on defense, switchability, great size, but also could play make on their own. Downhill guys who are missing some outside shooting here. Perhaps that'll be in play with the third selection. But I'm feeling really good. That's the pair I wanted for sure. What I put around it, it's going to depend on what's available. But I'm feeling good about that so far. Giannis and Magic Johnson.
I like it. I like it a lot. God dang it. You're making me nervous now.
You're up and you've got back-to-back picks here, your second and third picks. You've already got Kobe Bryant on the team, so you know they're going to have that Mamba mentality. Who are you pairing with Kobe here? And we'll put 30 seconds on the clock.
I'm going to go with another killer. Another guy with that Mamba mentality. I think this guy's style of play fits this league exceptionally well. I'm going with Allen Iverson.
Ooh, AI.
Look, this guy is a human highlight reel when it comes to that kind of creativity. He can run the point. Kobe can play more off ball. And I love the combination of Kobe and Allen Iverson. You might say that those two are a little bit too ball dominant to be together on the same court. But you know what? I feel like that's going to work really well when it comes to attacking the rim and being creative in that 3-on-3 style. Give me AI.
I mean, there's only three players on the court. They can all be ball dominant. Don't matter.
I guess they could.
I don't think it's a problem at all. I love that pairing. Okay, Kobe, Allen Iverson. This is an early 2000s fever dream. If you throw Vince Carter in here, Mitch, you made this team for 10-year-old Dallin. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not going Vince Carter because I'll tell you what, with my last pick, I need a big man.
Yes.
I need a big man. I need a guy to patrol the rim, a guy that's going to be good between the blocks offensively and defensively. And I'm between two. Give me the guy that can be a scorer. Give me Wilt.
Oh, nice.
Give me Wilt Chamberlain. Look, he's a defensive mastermind. He's a scorer. He's great in between the blocks. Elbows in. He's money. I want Wilt Chamberlain as my big man on this Big Three team.
I love it, Mitch. Wilt was a name I had written down. I mean, just a versatile player. A big, can rebound, can score, can do a lot. Great balance there to Kobe and AI. Kobe, Bryant, Allen Iverson, Wilt Chamberlain for Mitch Moe. And the team name is?
The Mambas.
The Mambas. All right. The Mambas.
What do you do with the Mambas? By... Rest in peace, Kobe. We're paying homage here.
I love it. The Mambas for Mitch Moe. And here I go with my final pick here in the third round. I've got Magic Johnson. I've got Giannis, Mitch, and you've maybe seen a theme here. I'm going to smother you on defense. That's the goal here. Mm. I want to be versatile on offense, but I want to be able to defend all positions. I want to be able to lock down on defense. You're getting nothing in the paint. You're getting nothing on the perimeter. So I'm going to go a little different here. There are some names, right? Because I mentioned this earlier. Outside shooting is going to be a problem, right? So do I consider like a Steph Curry? Absolutely, right? Would that be a great compliment here? Yes. But I want three defensive pillars switchable. I'm going to go with one of the most underrated stars in the history of the NBA. I'm going Scottie Pippen.
Wow.
Give me MJ's right-hand man on this team. And Magic Johnson, Scottie Pippen, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Good luck having a day on offense against that trio. That's what I'm saying. That's where we're at. We are team lockdown here for Dallin. Team lockdown with Magic Johnson, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Scottie Pippen, the Mambas for Mitch Moe, Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson, and Will Chamberlain. You win offense, I win defense. I kind of like the stylistic difference.
Sounds like a little Warriors-Celtics matchup here going on.
Maybe. I love that. Well,
okay. So were there any names that you also were considering taking when you were formulating this team together?
I had some legitimate names. Like I mentioned, Steph Curry was definitely one direction I would have thought going with some offensive shooting. If I wanted a defensive guard, which I was really going to consider, I would have gone Gary Payton. Like if I didn't get Magic, let's say you got Magic first, I probably would have gone like a Gary Payton because I loved the defense and playmaking on that side. For the memes, I have two players that I would have considered. Senior year Jimmer during the BYU National Player of the Year run, because that guy could hit shots from fucking anywhere. It didn't matter. And that seems very valuable in a 3-on-3. Just shoot that guy in the corner. He's going to make everything. So senior year Jimmer. And Team USA Charles Barkley were the two that I considered.
Oh yeah, he was violent.
He was the he led Team USA, the Dream Team, in 1992 in scoring. Charles Barkley was dominant that Olympics. When you're outscoring MJ and Magic and all that, that's all I'm saying. You know, maybe deserves some consideration.
I don't want
career Charles. I want Team USA Charles. That's what I want. 1992 okay. Dream Team Charles. That's what I want. Okay.
Okay.
what other names did you consider?
I considered Larry Bird.
Great all around game. So that's great
all around game. I considered Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, of course.
Right.
Considered him. You know, I wanted like 2002 Doug Christie for his lockdown defense.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Like,
yes.
Lockdown defense. That guy was on. Like, you could not beat that guy in 2002. I loved lockdown. And you know what? Staying on the Keems theme, I thought of like that early 2000s Peja. Like along the same vein of like your senior year Jimmer. Like a right. guy that just hit everything. So like. Jimmer probably hit more shots than Peja. Yeah, it was probably more efficient than Peja, you know, in that time. But, like, yeah, there was a ton of names that was, like, it was hard. When it came down to the big man, when I was debating between Wilt, I was actually debating between him and Shaq.
Okay, yeah.
I would have loved Shaq's presence in the block.
Kobe Shaq AI. Now that's just early 2000s NBA fandom right there. That's all that is.
I would want Orlando Magic Shaq.
Oh, 90s Shaq. Shaq and Penny Shaq.
Much more athletic. Able to run the floor. That's the Shaq I was looking for.
Fair enough. So. Yeah, the only other sort of jokey one that I thought of was Linsanity Jeremy Lin, because when that guy was on another level, I'd take Linsanity. Imagine a team of Linsanity, Trey Young at Oklahoma, and Jimmer from BYU. I mean, you're just getting lights out shooting. It's like.
Just no one going the block. Just no one going in the paint. Just everyone
playing a lick of defense. Just giving up a free shot every time. But hell, dude, you don't know who's getting the bucket on offense. You're
answering right back. Yeah. Wow.
All right. So just to recap one more time, Mitch team, the Mambas, Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson, Wilt Chamberlain. My team Lockdown, Magic Johnson, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Scottie Pippen. As Mitch said, we'll throw it up on the Instagram and you vote. Let us know who you think had the better team here. And maybe who you would pick as your big three. All type, if you were to thought about it. Maybe a fun exercise next time if we want to do this, Mitch. I would love to do big threes with current NBA players.
Yes.
Like just absolutely. Guys in the NBA right now, like the most intriguing big three combination we could come up with. That might be a fun one for next time. So absolutely. Great idea. Great segment, Mitch. And great podcast, because that's pretty much all we've got, huh? All we've got for the Sports Hour today. Again, we appreciate you guys sticking around. And listening as you do every week. If you do not already, we'd invite you to check us out on social media. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, the TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lil Thoint. Check out the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Look, if you think that our big three is missing someone, if you think that you can draft a better big three than me and Dallin, go ahead and get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Leave us a voice message and we'll play that here live on the show. We'll get your feedback. We want you to be a part of the conversation. That is anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Become a permanent part of the conversation. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcast. That is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Go ahead and get on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating review. Tell us that we suck, because Dallin, that's the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we could get better, guys. And believe it or not, we'd really like to. Like, I know you listen to us every week and you're like, these guys still suck, but we really would like to be better. So please, if you have any suggestions, you know, let us know.
I'm tired of saying it for like 130 episodes, whatever we're at right now. Like, just tell us we suck and what we need to get better at, because I'm tired of sucking, Dallin. I'm tired of sucking.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm just going to be immature here and not make any jokes. All right, guys, this has been.
I knew it.
I can't help it. I'm like a 13-year-old boy at heart. Guys. We love you. We appreciate you. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend. Celebrate this beautiful country that we live in. And we will catch you next week.
God bless the USA. See ya.